Hi, my name is Michael Poli, and I've never seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer. My friends are obsessed and always make jokes and references to it, and so now, 20 years later, I've been convinced to watch the show from beginning to end, one episode a week. I'm a Buffy virgin. We've got a lot of guests. This is the most guests we've had on the show so far. We've got Dennis St. John, famous illustrator.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
We've got Travis Morris McKell, noted physician.
Thank you.
And John Landis.
Woo!
Part cyborg.
Part cyborg and school teacher.
And director of Animal House.
So I guess we'll get started with...
Who are you?
I'm Michael Poli, video maker.
And host.
And host of the show. So I haven't seen Buffy. This was probably the... I don't want to give too much away, but this is the most fun episode I've seen so far. So I enjoyed this one a bit. There's a ton of problems. But anyway, let's get into it. So, starting scene by scene, season one, episode four, Teacher's Pet. When did it air, Travis? Did you do the research on this?
1997.
Sometime in 97. This episode, like the first couple episodes, opens at the Bronze. Again, we're cutting out of a woman's mouth screaming, which is a really odd way to start a shot. And then it's this heroic scene where Xander saves Buffy and then jumps on stage and plays like he's in a rad alt rock band. It's quite the 90s fantasy taking place here in the opening. Yeah. Obviously a dream opener for this episode.
And I'd say this scene to me has a great use of the color red. Great red pool table, great red lipstick on Buffy. And both Buffy and Xander had really great hair, much better than their normal high school hair. It's very weird.
Fantasy. It's Xander's fantasy self.
Yeah, and the vampire Xander kills has angel hair.
Good noticing.
And not to read too much into this, but there is something definitely there about Xander's character. About he has this giant crush on Buffy, but in his fantasies, she's helpless, right? Like, he's got such masculinity issues, this guy.
Oh, my God.
No, that's a great call. Like the in the role reversal heroism fantasy, that's really interesting.
Like if he had a real true crush on her, it would be about her saving him, right? It would be embracing everything she is.
And then Xander's rudely awakened from his fantasy by Buffy. He's drooling on himself and not realizing it. It's a really fun intro to the real world, and we're in science class learning about ants by Dr. Gregory. Who's the science lab teacher. Springs basically a pop quiz on Buffy. And then in this like classic bumbling high school sequence, Willow tries to explain to her the answers to the questions about how ants communicate. And Buffy has to interpret it from what Willow's doing. It's very silly. But clearly Buffy did not do her homework and is improvising her way through all of her life experiences. Which is probably a metaphor for where she is in her life as a slayer, where everything's improvised. She doesn't know much about the role that she has to take on. So, Gregory
takes... She's good at thinking on her feet.
She's got a first-rate mind. So, I like Dr. Gregory because he's another doctor, and I really relate to this character. But I love this scene. I totally forgot about this. You know, years go by, don't go think about it, but... I love this. He says, don't listen to anyone's negative opinion about you. So he's got this whole thing where he says, I heard about you from Principal Flutie, and she thought this was going to be this negative thing. And then he just flips it on his head. Classic Whedon, right? But I don't know. This is like great life advice. And then, of course, he dies.
Whoa.
Hold on a second. I totally disagree about that scene. I think that... Doctor.
Oh, John, can I phrase the question for you, though? Because, John, you're a teacher.
Yeah.
Have you ever had the scene with a student where you're telling them that they're great and you're dismissive of them, but also complimentary at the same time?
Oh, totally. Yeah. So this is a really familiar scene to me because I've lived it from both sides. Right. So like.
Yeah, this is the teacher disappointed in you not living up.
Exactly. The potential potential speech.
No. He was more hopeful.
I got the potential speech from. Since we all went to the same high school, I got the potential speech from Mr. Garral. I got the potential speech from Mr. Guizzo. I got the potential speech a lot, like as kind of like a like.
Mr. Guizzo was our science teacher too. I feel like we need to clarify. You got the potential speech from the science
from the
teacher
biology teacher
in high school, so,
and then
yeah, like Dr. Gregory.
And I want to say that like as a student, it did nothing to turn me around as a student. It only made me feel sort of sad. And as a teacher, I've also as a teacher, Buffy, I've given it.
He had lived. Buffy's life would have changed.
That's...
She would have become a...
Dr. Gregory had lived. Who knows?
Maybe.
No.
As a teacher, I've given the potential speech in spite of myself, even though like I kind of like hated it as a kid. I've given it to kids who I thought were smart, but were being, you know, shitty. And again, it doesn't really seem to do anything. Rarely do the kids have the reaction that Buffy had, which is like, oh yeah, I am great. I am going to turn my life around. You know, like that's kind of her reaction in the moment. And mostly kids just sort of like grumble and then like walk away because they don't want to talk to you.
She is profoundly affected by the speech. You're right. It is a little bit of a surprise that this kind of half-baked speech works out on her.
Well, I think it is saying that you received this speech a lot. This is probably the first time Buffy has heard this speech.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
She really lives in a world where most authority figures...
Way more negative.
An artist.
Very true.
No, and I wrote down in my notes when I was watching this, oh, someone's knifed to Buffy, they're going to get killed.
Yeah, I wrote that too. Yeah. No, I think that deserves a drink. That's a definite. Yeah.
Oh, in the Buffy drinking game, yeah. Absolutely. And if an authority figure is nice to Buffy.
Yeah, personally, I can't decide. I can't decide if killing the science teacher by the creature was a strategic move or just an accident. Right, the science teacher who knows about bugs dies in the episode where there's
so
a giant I think bug. It's a strategic move. It's a egg.
No, I've got some questions about this, and I actually had this later in my notes, but maybe we can edit it till later if it's appropriate, or you guys can tell me to shut up and move it later. But
no, we can violate the timeline within an episode.
Yeah, but like my question,
okay.
I mean, I had it in another section of the Travis trademark structure, but you know, so my question
that I have to withhold.
I've got two big questions. Like, number one, is Dr. Gregory a virgin?
I think that it's implied by the eggs.
I think it is. I think it's totally implied. And
those are his. Those are.
And
his
does that mean okay? So. Okay. And then question number two, like sub question, like does that mean that the she mantis also seduced him at some point, but just like sort of went about it differently?
Well, this. So this clearly brings up one of the gaping holes, which is Blaine has witnessed a horrible murder because when later on he describes what happens, right. And so he's witnessed this event.
Yeah, who did he see get
the
murdered?
Question is, exactly. It's also possible that Dr. Gregory simply was murdered, decapitated, and the eggs are from some other victim.
Yeah, it's possible.
I'm in favor of an off-screen victim. Because the timeline for Blaine getting kidnapped is like...
And seeing the murder seems... It seems like Dr. Gregory was killed the night before, then Blaine goes missing the next day.
But why...
It seems like
We definitely know there's one... At least one off-screen victim that
yes.
The eggs are from in the house. Right. And we don't know if the eggs in the biology classroom are from Dr. Gregory or from another male victim.
Right.
Right? So that's...
Yeah, another.
But option. I guarantee the answer is actually it's much more thoughtless, and it's just a clever way to end an episode.
Great.
Just like the last episode.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's an X-Files
cheerleader trapped in the statue. Like it's the same ending.
It's a throwaway. Yeah, it's.
I also have notes for later on about talking how my opinion about how Buffy as a series addresses monsters has changed from when I first watched it. But we could save it for later because,
you know,
it is weird. They're much more focused on the metaphor than the monster, which I think at the time I appreciated, but now I'm just more into the monster.
Yeah.
This monster doesn't make any fucking sense.
There's quite a bit of monster in this episode, though.
It's good. It's good monster. It's interesting. It's like the two scenes we're talking about happened above the rolling credits. Like there's the intro credits, which we haven't talked about ever. Buffy's a Slayer, you know, blah blah blah, and then there's like the rolling credits, and now the, I don't know, now the opening credits, like after that scene, we haven't talked about the opening credits much. There's not much to say, I guess, but it's like a lot of scenes to happen before the rolling credits or the opening.
It is, yeah, it's a large set.
It's interesting. It's like you could be flipping channels, be like,
twist, it's two, right?
Yeah, it's like what the hell is this thing? It's strange. Anyways,
So moving on here, Dr. Gregory is he's taken. We assume he's killed. We see these like plant hands come and grab him, or these insectoid hands. Well, he's examining some secret slides because he's a boring teacher, leads a boring life, and he's just looking at slides.
Fascinated.
He's much more. He likes slides.
Classic virgin behavior. Classic
virgin. So I want to segue into this being Xander's American Pie episode. This is like, why are they so obsessed with?
There's so many like Xander American Pie episodes. Don't worry about it.
Yes.
Oh, that's good. That's going into my prediction section, by the way. So that's later. So we cut from the, you know, the killing of Gregory to the Bronze, our favorite club, and a Hot Topic band is playing indie rock, and we get to meet some of Xander's friends, though I assume they're not really friends. No. Because they're just disposable
Xander
humans.
Rifles.
I think also Xander lives in a reality of like he mostly talks to people who bully him, with the exception of Willow. Like,
well, I think everyone bullies him. I mean, he's just like some high school kid. He has like two friends, and everyone else bullies him.
So he's having a classic sex conversation. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, keep going.
So he has a classic sex conversation with Blaine and company, another anonymous dude, and just talking about how they scored, how much have they scored. And then Xander tries to imply that he's having sex with both Willow and Buffy, and tries to confidently walk off screen and put his arms around them and ask them to play along. It's weird. It doesn't really work. They kind of like giggle it off. It's just a strange, sad scene. And then and then we have an Angel sighting. And I like this depiction of Angel because it's like,
is that what we're gonna title those, the Angel sightings?
Yeah. Well, he's the cryptic warning character who shows up, and then I love the line, "You're cold." No, you look really cold. And then gives her his jacket. It's like super dumb scene where he gives Buffy his jacket.
Oh, I also want to bring up, this last episode I watched on Netflix, this episode I decided I'm going to try to watch it as close to the real experience as possible. So I watched it on DVD on a TV from the 90s. It was like PhD.
Ooh, CRT. Nice.
And it was so dark. It was so hard to see. Like, in the scene, they talk about his wound. I couldn't see the wound. I was like, what the the lighting was like really hard on an old TV.
I also watched,
but I think it might be.
It's abysmal, okay. Still. I watched on the DVD as well. It's abysmal on HD. Like it's, I gotta say, in general, there's some great quotes here. You know, Xander goes, "Angel's buff." He's like, "Why didn't Buffy ever mention Angel's a buff man? He's a very attractive man," which is just, that's like the best part of the scene. And then second favorite part of this scene is Buffy does this incredible shoulder work that precipitates Angel taking off his jacket. Like this needlessly shrugging of the shoulders. You go back and rewatch that scene. She's doing some really like hilarious shoulder work, and that's what prompts Angel to take off his jacket. It's like, it's a very strange.
Making her shoulders dance.
Yeah, it's all sort of physical weird stuff, but it's kind of endearing because you don't see that weird stuff anymore. Like it's very strange. It's lovely.
But is it just to imply that she's cold? Is that what shoulder work is about?
Yeah, it's all the shoulder work's about.
It's not the dance. The dance of love.
No. And she does it like three times. She shrugs her shoulders. And you're like, what is this woman doing? And then you realize that's why she's doing it.
Well, Angel gives us a cryptic warning that there's something is going to happen. And there's maybe someone dangerous.
God, he's so
This awful. Is something I appreciate about this show, even early on, is it's like, it set up the structure of like, oh, there's this villain coming this week. He's got a fork, right? And like, in a normal show, that would be the villain of the week. But he's just ends up just being this red herring for a while, and then he ends up being a plot point later on. He becomes a device. But like, I don't know, I just think it's interesting. Most shows, I think, even now, wouldn't like build something so layered for a single episode for non-returning characters, you know?
Although at least you know, we should give Buffy a gold star. She actually got a vampire this week. So she got a lot of different monsters she fought, but at least she killed a vampire.
She did. Got her numbers up from last.
So after this scene, we go to the school just outside the school where I guess people hang out. And Xander has learned that Dr. Gregory is missing. And no one's he's kind of excited because he didn't do his homework, which is a key problem in this episode. And then hypnotic music plays as Xander sees the arrival of the new substitute teacher, Natalie French. And then she asks him, you know, where the classroom is, and he about loses his mind. It's a total horn dog scene, and it's like hard. It's a hard to watch scene.
Extremely hard.
Yeah.
Can I just say?
I also the opening during the scene, I wrote a note. Giles amused by his own jokes. How lovely! And then I don't remember what that joke was, but I remember being charmed by Giles' acting in this. I wish I wrote down what the
joke. Yeah, I'll tell you the joke. The thing is, there's two parts of the initial part of this. The first is Giles is eating an apple. Why is Giles eating an apple? Okay, number one, like, why does he think he's eating an apple and doing his lines? This is ridiculous. Then two,
it sounds like shoulder work to me.
I'm apple sorry, work. I'm doing some great apple jokes. Work.
Why is he eating this apple?
Why is it unreasonable for a man to eat an apple at work? That seems totally normal.
No, no. Oh, well, how about? I don't know, John. I think you got lost in cyberspace. But he's eating an apple, trying to do a line, and then he's like talking about. Buffy's telling him that there's some fork guy, and he's like, what do you mean fork guy? Who told you this? Another angel. Who's that? Another guy. He's like, that's what, and he's like, there's too many guys in your life. And then he starts laughing at himself with apple bits in his mouth.
That was a good line. That made me laugh. There's too many guys in your life. Yeah.
Like, why is this man eating an apple trying to do this scene while he's walking?
None of Giles' behavior in that scene
is very talented. He's very talented.
None of it is anything.
I would do all of the library. Things.
I would eat an apple at work. I would tell a joke, and I would laugh at my own joke, and no one else would laugh. I feel like that's just my life.
Well, yeah.
So that's really interesting, John, because I think that's something we could talk about in a bigger context, not just with this episode, but relating to different characters. Like, because obviously we watched this when we were young enough, or not Mike, but, like, that we would relate more to the high school characters, but now we're relating to these terrible one-off adult.
Dude, I've got a whole thing in my notes about Principal Flutie for later on.
So after this scene, we go to this back to the science lab.
Blaine, we see this character that's a throwaway character.
Oh, right. Does Blaine outside also?
Yeah, Blaine escorts Natalie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He escapes it. Yeah, he's... I love this line because it's so obnoxious. It's basically says, like, hey, I'll take you to the science lab. It's not far from the place of my greatest athletic accomplishment. Right over here. Such a douchey line. It's great.
And can we talk about the normality in this school of people hitting on teachers and teachers being flirtatious? Like, nobody's like, dude.
We'll get to the pollination joke. I mean, the pollination joke was, I mean, just who thought pollination was going to be so sexual? But yeah, I mean, the bees, I guess. But
biologists.
I know.
Biologists.
Sick. Yeah, they want to pollinate all over her. It's disgusting. Yeah.
So next we're in the science class.
Yeah, so then we're in the science class learning about praying mantises. They're not ugly. And French is like ridiculously upset by the implication that they could be ugly and gross-looking creatures. But we learn essentially about what this praying mantis creature will do. I think it's heavily implied that she will be this praying mantis already, and that men are going to be fertilized in some way. It's kind of a rad, weird scene introducing the monster. And then I'm not sure what happens next if we do go right into the Giles scene or if we go to the lunchroom after that.
One last thing that this the class brings up is. First off, Buffy's immediately not serious about school because that's not Dr. Gregory. Like, she gives this flippant answer, words bug ugly spring to mind when she asks about these praying mantis. So it's like immediately not serious. It's like a plot. I don't know. She's serious with Gregory, but then she's not serious with other adults. And then, of course, I don't know if this is just a one-off, but they immediately talk about the nature of the praying mantis. Like, it's not its fault. It eats its mate. You know, that's just like the nature of it. And then that sort of that's just how this creature is, and that it's good because that's how it is. But and then there's this whole then the I think this maybe this will feed into later episodes. You know, what is there anything like good? Any of these creatures, could they ever be good? That was what was brought up in my mind. But I thought, well, is it a creature? You know, that's sort of.
This sounds like a theme thing to get to.
I don't know if they're really trying to build this, or this is just a explanation of mantis behavior. Like, who knows? I don't know. They don't really go into it too much.
It's the metaphorical monster, I mean, is being described.
Is the monster a monster, or is it just, it is what it is?
It's a different evil. The insect, the bug monster is a different kind of monster than the vampire. Yeah. Its motivations are different.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably get into later with themes. I think Dennis has some ideas about this stuff. So then the lunchroom scene happens, and this is where we come across the body of Dr. Gregory. It's, of course, found by Cordelia right after she says something bitchy to someone. So this is the theme in the Whedon world where Cordelia says something shitty to somebody and then something really fucked up happens to her. So
so that's a drink right there.
Yep, that's a drink, totally. and they find his body without the head.
Maybe it's just because I was just reading some Archie before I watched this episode, but Cordelia is so Veronica Lodge, like, just like she's the exact, at this point in the series, they're like the exact same character, right? She's like the rich, bitchy girl, which makes Buffy, Betty Cooper, which makes Xander both Jughead, but like, or Archie in Jughead's body. And then I picked, Willow is the tech nerd Dalton. He's the only like nerd character in the Archie universe. So that's as far as I got with that.
And then who's Jughead?
I really think
is that, he like a Weatherby? What is he? Who's Jughead?
Yeah, I don't know if he's with Weatherby or if he's what's the female teacher, Miss Grangey or something?
Oh man, you're really deep in the Archie metaverse.
Well, who's Reggie? Isn't Reggie a guy, a character?
Reggie's Blaine.
Not Reggie.
Whatever.
Reggie is
Blaine. Are you thinking of Reggie from? Richie Rich?
Oh, maybe thinking of Josie. Ooh, maybe thinking... No,
no, Reggie is
like,
a...
There's a Reggie guy. He's like black hair.
Yeah. Oh,
I think
mind.
He's also in Richie Rich, too.
There's
he's
okay,
the,
yeah.
Male Veronica, basically.
Male Veronica.
But, like, to a lesser degree.
I think Reggie is more or less the same character in Richie Rich and Archie. That's weird.
I bet he is.
We are off the tracks degree.
I was just about ready to bring up Josie the Pussycat, so let's get back up.
Okay, so then we get... So the body gets discovered. Then we're back spending Giles' time. Turns out there's not just this one murder to deal with. There's another random murder that's taking place on campus. And we're in the center of a mystical convergence, that conversation. We don't know what's going on. Go ahead.
Xander says Monster Island, which I just thought was a fun, kaiju joke.
Yeah, good reference.
Which made me look up if there was what the name of the praying mantis kaiju is, and it's Kamacharis, aka G-Mantis. So that's... I don't know why I'm doing that.
Really French.
That's pretty rad, though. That's a worthy aside. That would appear in appendix if you were writing the Encyclopedia of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You could definitely get a little photo insert of that character.
G-Mantis.
And I think they're looking up some information about, maybe that's a little bit later. So Giles is warning Buffy about not to go into anything because they don't have any information, and it's a little too soon to do any investigating. And then this is cut to her investigating, which is this classic Whedon cut that happens several times in this episode.
There's a drink.
Oh, yeah, it is.
I'm glad you already figured that out, Mike.
All right, so I think that's three drinks so far this episode.
When she's, it's kind of this charming, weird scene where Buffy is wandering around at night, checking up on the hobos of her town. And they're kind of harmless hobos, like sleeping beneath a bench. And she's kind of, it's like kind of sweet. And then she moves a bush aside. And this must be like, they might have said no money on this episode after the monster. So it's like, and then a vampire appears in the bush.
This is like
we can't see shit. There is a prolonged fight that I don't see shit of.
This was lit for
atmospheric reasons.
Infrared camera. This was lit for. I mean, I don't understand this. And there's a police / mob of police as well.
Yeah, the cinematographer,
the monster,
just came back from Desert Storm. He was used to lighting things for night vision cameras. So there's a run-in with a vampire, and then for whatever reason, Buffy loses the vampire. And then follows the vampire, and sees the vampire run into Natalie, and then Natalie terrifies the vampire. Vampire runs off. It's just like you know something's up. It's super clear that she's gonna be the monster. So now we cut back to school, and then Falutie runs into Buffy, and she wants to just go to science class, and so she can look into this, investigate this a little bit more to find out more about Natalie. But it's kind of rad.
She tells Giles about Natalie, like that they were freaked out. Oh yeah, like what's who's if you're
oh yeah
you know if you're someone who can shave
Giles actually
with your hand,
cares a little.
Well, no, he said she's well proportioned, and then Buffy mocks him. Mrs. Well Proportioned, yeah.
Right, because you can't mention Natalie without saying how pretty she is. Every male has
every
to say
male
something
is susceptible
right.
to this. This
even Giles. That's an important detail. Like,
yeah, yeah. Maybe Giles has had sex. Who knows?
I love the scene with Faludi because it's the first attempt at any intervention. A normal intervention on behalf of any student, despite the number of murders that have taken place.
And it's such a mild intervention that Buffy treats so badly, and it's like, you have to go to one counseling session. And it's only the kids who saw the body. Like, there's no announcement. But I really like that scene also. I had forgotten how funny Mr. Flutie is. Like, that was like some rapid-fire, crazy dialogue. The, like, decomposed, you know, stay away from the D words. Like,
this is maybe my. This might be my favorite scene in the whole episode, the Principal Flutie scene, because like, and I already like hashed this hash really well in the first episode, and that's fine. But I just like Flutie, he wants to be caring, but he wants to be authoritative, and he can't do them at the same. Doesn't know how to do those things at the same time, so he ends up being neither. He ends up just being a mess. And as a teacher, I have this total involuntary empathy for that. And that's enough. I've already said enough about that.
Yeah, what's the bit about, like, I'm there if you need a hug, but a metaphorical hug.
Exactly.
But we can't actually touch each other. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I totally related to that. And I know that, like, Flutie's the butt of the joke in this scene. But when I watch that with my grown-up eyes, like, I completely relate to Flutie in that scene.
Yeah, I think I had totally forgotten how good a character Flutie is. That he's got some funny bits.
Well, he's super transparent about the whole process, but you know, it really sets up all the problems that modern teachers and faculty have, right? You want to help, but you can only help so much, and you can't really force someone to be helped. You're just creating the opportunity, and then of course we catch you on the scene with Cordelia after that, which is kind of like a rad riff on being helped, where she's like, well, you know, I haven't been able to eat since I saw the body, and you know what, I've lost half a pound, more or less, which is pretty dark interpretation of it, but it's funny. I mean, within the world of Buffy, that's a joke, so
yeah. Well, and Cordelia's gone through so much already. I'll even in just after episode 4, she's got some pretty strong coping mechanisms.
That's a good point. I mean, she really has been through a lot already. Like, almost more than anybody.
She's already been blinded.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, I got my list of stuff that's happened to her over here. Yeah, it's quite a list. Yeah, so she was silenced in the last episode by the witch. She was cursed. She found a body in the locker room. She was attacked in the bronze.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she found the science teacher's body so far. And I'm sure this list will be epically long by the time this seven series.
But the tone of every Cordelia scene is still like, fuck her. Like, that's still the tone of every scene in spite of that. Like,
right, because she refuses to learn anything, right? She's just learning about herself. She's so self-centered. Ugh. So then
and also, like,
we...
They haven't let her in at all. Like, she still lives in this, like, in their mind, in this world where she doesn't know vampires exist, right? They haven't let her into the big secret. So, like, she's just living in this world where terrible things keep happening, and there's not an explanation to comfort her.
Yeah, for no reason, yeah. Oh.
So then we cut to the science teacher situation with Natalie. We don't know where Blaine is, and now Xander's being asked to stay late to help out, he's being asked to stay late, and then he gets invited by Natalie to her house, and she writes her address on a piece of paper, hands it to him. This is an absurd scene. This is every young man's fantasy of being invited to the teacher's home. Xander, again, losing his mind. This is every fantasy. Like, this could be a dream sequence. And then right after that, we see her eat a bug sandwich with mayonnaise.
Yeah, I actually wrote notes about the mayonnaise. That really grossed me out more than the bug. Like, who likes a cold bread and mayonnaise sandwich? Ugh.
But now it appears.
All right.
That is a substitute teacher's salary sandwich.
Yeah, but like, who labels their food food?
Someone trying very hard to human.
Yeah, someone who's not a human.
I human well. Food, see? Lunch.
Also, like, I want to point out that those crickets were totally harmed in the making of this TV episode. Like,
hold on one moment here.
Even if she didn't eat them, they have been mayonnaise.
Yeah, but like, no, she folds over the bread and she totally squishes like 5 crickets, which is fine. But like, I don't know if PETA cares about crickets.
I don't think even
we don't want to go down that rabbit hole. No, I think if we're gonna start worrying about bugs, we're gonna.
Well, they're invertebrates. No, you don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
So there's a research scene next, right?
Right. So next is the research scene. We're gonna
which is another drink because there's a shot of Willow sitting down at a computer. Yes. That's in the opening.
It's in the
title.
It's in the
another drink
intro. Yes, I'm glad we talked about that.
Giles again doesn't know anything about computers. Willow's gonna handle all the research, and he's gonna make a transatlantic call to figure it out. He hints about Ento mythology. That he's going to learn more about, which is a wonderful made-up science.
Yeah, I like that he just has so many colleagues from all around the world that somebody can study entomology and mythology as a combined thing and go crazy from it. He's like, this didn't even occur to me until right now.
And then, and now Buffy's actually excited to do some homework. Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, I want to say this is... This is an interesting scene to me just because I think it's structured a little weird where usually, and I think maybe in coming episodes, what they'll do is they don't know what the monster is. So they do research to figure out what the monster is. They figure out what they think it is and then they go kill it. This one, they pretty much have all the pieces together. They know she's a mantis somehow. And they're like, but how is that possible? So their research, they're more, it's more scientific because they're more trying to figure out if their theory is correct before they act on it. Right,
I would agree, and I would say that this is, I'll talk about this later. I guess I think the pacing of these scenes is way off because we're about to see a lot about, like, I don't know. I feel like a lot is going to happen, but we're still really introductory. They don't really understand who the creature is, and then I just feel like it drags.
Yeah, this is a good point.
I don't like the pacing, and I'll talk...
This episode is really trying to figure out the structure, because we have the stuff in this episode we never see again, really, which is, like, bringing back visuals from earlier in the show. Yeah. It keeps cutting to Xander's fantasy, and then even cutting back to, like, an informational scene.
Mm.
Like, they really... I think it's kind of interesting. It makes... Just to see, like, them figuring out what the... structure of this, what their storytelling structure is, you know.
I like the use of factoids. Buffy says factoid 1, factoid 2, factoid 3. She has really interesting language in this episode, but
yeah, I also like in this scene she takes charge. She really is, yeah. Like, she's the girl with the plan, totally. You know.
And well, hacking.
So after this scene, after Giles acknowledges that he's not going to acknowledge that Willow is doing something that she shouldn't, and that he's an adult and he's ignoring it, then we cut back to Xander arriving at the teacher's house. Oh, hold on. Is that where you're?
There's a hallway scene.
Oh, Buffy's a hallway Xander. Scene. Oh, right. Where Buffy tries to confront Xander to get him to change his mind about visiting the teacher and convince him there's a problem. But Xander's mind, she's just jealous of him. And this is just a rad, distorted scene, which just it shows how, like, off Xander's impressions of reality are. Just like his fantasy is so off, you know, where, again, Buffy is powerless and he's rescuing her. Now it's like Buffy's trying to save him and he can't see what's going on. But, you know, also pheromones, right? So she's unable to stop him. And so now just Xander's on a crash course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Xander really doesn't comprehend who he is, like, at all. He, like, really sees himself as an entirely different person than how we see him, you know? He's totally Archie, he's totally Jughead, but he thinks he's Archie. He's like, hey, women love me. I have no evidence so far, but I'm pretty sure.
Hey, his confidence is off the wall for someone with no confidence.
He's just a really weird character. You know, he's not bad. He's not like an evil guy like Cordelia or evil person. Like, Cordelia's portrayed very poorly. But he's also just a very strange, self-absorbed, you know, character so far. Who's just, I don't know, is not really all that redeeming other than he's like barely redeeming. Like, as a, I don't know, as a good person.
No, this is a classic, I'm sure classic, Xander-sploitation episode. It's just focused on a unidirectional, simple story about his sexuality. So he shows up.
Yeah, no, that's part of my idea, that this is, in Xander's mind, until things go wrong, this is like his American Pie episode. He's like, this is the episode where the teacher.
Like, yeah.
Right, he's finally going to hook up with an older woman. This is great.
Yeah. And like, let's not even think about the weird consequences of a sophomore trying to hook up with a teacher. Like,
or that every other person is going to hook up with her too. Like, Blade's going to hook up with her first, then him. Oh, right. Man, she's just rehearsing for when we hook up.
Can we also acknowledge that you keep referencing American Pie, but one of the characters was literally also in American Pie, aka Willow, which is just great.
Oh, yeah.
Willow was one who was literally in American Pie as well.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I think this predates American Pie, right? And
no, it does by 2 years.
Yeah, I think.
But it's just funny. Like, this is an American Pie episode, and he's not the one character who goes on to literally star.
But this episode is totally riffing on, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. Oh, yeah. But this is totally riffing on the trope of the perpetual virgin in teen films. I'm thinking 16 Candles, Porky's. I don't know.
Also, anything with Jamie Lee Curtis in the 80s, right?
Well, there's no shortage of teen virgin films.
Right.
But I prefer Xander to Jason Biggs. So,
Yeah, me too.
Sorry, I keep saying American Pie, but that's more of my blanket term for the whole genre than the specific. So I apologize if that.
No, it's totally legit to call it that.
So I like the next scene, which is Xander is finally at Miss French's house, although is it wherever Miss French is living. He's there. And the great part, I think, to me, I don't know, there's two great lines. You guys could dissect the scene, but the two lines I think are great is like Xander drinks this martini very quickly, and of course Miss French doesn't touch her martini. But then he's like drugged, and then he's like, this is a great line of, so that's a martini, like that's a legitimate effect of a martini, like,
yes, it is.
Like, that's how he kind of like, I love that. I think that was hilarious. I think I'm gonna use that in future.
I like the naiveness of chugging a martini. Yeah. And then like the other person's like, oh, cheers. It's like, oh, I've never consumed alcohol. I don't know the rules of any of these rules.
And then like the first
that happened, a similar thing drugs. Happened at a poker game I was at a few years ago where we're all just going to sip whiskey, and one guy chugged it. I was like, what's everybody else doing?
Did he say that's not that whiskey?
Right.
You're going to lose this poker game tonight.
And his head later. Well, and then immediately after saying, so that's a martini, and he's all drugged up, he says, I love Buffy, which is, I don't know, over the top. Just classic. I love Buffy. It just
doesn't well, affect Miss French at all. She's not offended by that.
No, also, not at all.
Also, he just knows. I mean, this is the fundamental problem with being a teenage boy in this universe, is he's in love with everything. He just met Buffy.
He's 16. Linoleum turns him on.
Oh, my God. I feel like that's a line from somewhere I'm just not placing.
One more bad line in this one. Nice chest. I mean, dress.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't even deliver it. This is pre-martini that he says He doesn't even
terrible
deliver it smoothly. Like,
also, I mean, it's not even
really that, emphasizes it chest. And
it is a push-up bra. Like, it is a push-up bra, but it's not even that eccentric. It's not even that like exceptional.
Trav, the problem is not with her boobs. The problem is with what he says.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying. Like, you know, you can float a nice chest line, but. There's not even, it's not even like an over the, just.
They kill any opportunity for suspense with the way they write Xander's character in this episode. They're keeping it teen friendly.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So Xander, immediately after he's touched by a woman and then has to confess all his secrets, he wakes up in a cage. Do we cut to the cage?
Yeah, next thing is
I think there's a little bit more library scene.
Yeah.
No, we go to caged. Well, it doesn't matter. Cage sheet and the library scene are right beside each other.
But he's caged up with Blaine.
No, wait. Oh,
go ahead.
I don't want to skip over the library stuff, because isn't there a part where Buffy says, don't worry about Xander, he's probably home safe. But she already tried to talk him out of going to the house.
Oh, yeah.
It's really confusing.
Right, because we keep cutting back and forth now, where we assume Xander will be eaten at any moment, and then to Buffy and the gang, Scooby gang, I guess, trying to like figure out where he is and how they can save him, right? So it's like,
oh, I also,
the cuts are a little bit fast.
Where they send Giles off to the video library to like record bat screeching.
Yes.
It's like there's whole sections of this library like we never see, apparently. Where you just go out this door. There's an entirely other part of this library.
Also, Giles has never seen
video
it. He's the librarian.
Yeah.
It's the audio visual section. I mean, who's stalking the AV section? Because Buffy has to tell them where it is. It's like books, but you hear them. It's like, what?
I also noted that Xander in the cage has a lot of rings. He has two rings on his left, one on his right.
Yes.
Like, no man needs to wear that many rings.
A lot of rings. I noticed that too.
Anyway, classic version problem.
Is that just like 90s fashion that has like disappeared?
I think it's a weird simulacrum of 90s fashion, like all the fashion in Buffy.
Yeah.
Like it's this weird sort of abstraction of 90s fashion that no one, of course, really dressed like that. But
it's an exaggeration of it.
Yeah.
Now. But it took place at
you
the
learned
time,
your...
but now that doesn't exist at all.
No, not at all.
I think if you were to base your fashions on what music videos were popular at the
exactly.
time, maybe it made sense to wear a lot of rings.
Yep. It was a thing.
So Giles finds the bat sounds, makes a recording, and then Willow finds out that Miss French is a 90-year-old woman, and they get the address. So they're going to go track her down. So they run to what they think is the home of Miss French, and it turns out it is a 90-year-old woman. She's been retired for who knows how long, but she taught for 30 years, and it's the wrong Miss French.
It's Ron Howard's mom.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, the actor is Ron Howard's mom.
She's good in the scene.
She is good.
But yeah. I like
I
this because they really got tricked. Go ahead.
There's a line before that where they find out how old she is, and Giles is like, she's extremely well preserved.
Yes. Needless.
So,
right.
Line.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. I don't know if anybody has watched original Star Trek recently, but this is a stupid connection.
I actually,
dude, edit this out. But like the what's the episode? The where there's the creepy kid.
Clearly, edit
there's,
this
there's
out.
The alien that's a dummy, and then it's really a creepy kid. That's
it's
Ron Howard's
Clint
brother.
Howard?
Yeah, Clint's Clint Howard.
Yeah,
it's his. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Natalie French is actually that. Baylock is Baylock's mom. Weird connection. Edit that out. I'm sorry. Moving on.
That's good. We should talk about it. I've been rewatching original Treks.
Dude, you got to start listening to Mission Log, the episode by episode podcast. It's really good.
Oh, I've been told to watch. I listened to the Best of Both Worlds episode.
All right. Moving on.
All right. So my issue with Blaine. So there's let's just. Basically, there's cutting back and forth between Blaine and Xander in the cage, and then Buffy, Willow's, Giles doing stuff. But my clear issue with this Blaine and Xander in the cage is Blaine clearly describes that he's seen Miss French kill somebody. And he gives not only the worst vague description, like you, this character is just totally worthless. I feel like this is an evil character I could have seen die in this episode. But
yeah.
He's like a... I was expecting him to be dead. I was surprised that he was still alive in a cage.
Yeah, I wonder if there was a specific thing of them worrying about, like, keeping the kill count low since they're...
Yeah, for the MPAA.
Yeah. Because there is no reason for him to live.
I disagree. I disagree.
But yeah, you're right. It leads to this idea that there is another... There's at least one other victim.
Yeah.
There has to be.
But the reason...
But then maybe she's hunting virgins
in
a different
school. What happens
also.
At the end. Like the reason for Blaine to live is so that he can be embarrassed at the end. Like, it's so much more humiliating for him. Like, if he had died, it wouldn't have been anything. But his embarrassment at the end is so valuable.
Well, the issue I have with him is not only does he not describe or give any good information to Xander, he's clearly also not that traumatized after seeing someone get killed. And then three, when this mantis creature appears, he's making a joke about the eggs. Xander's screaming, like, what's going to happen? And he's like, how do you like your eggs, bro? Over easy or sunny side up? And the worst part about that is that joke doesn't even make sense regarding eggs. It's just saying words that's just how people eat eggs. It has no bearing on actual egg laying on top of you. They would neither be sunny side
it's
up.
It's a very superficial joke. He must not have done his homework, Travis.
I'm sorry, Trav. If we're going to start complaining about people making superficial jokes in the face of danger in Buffy, talk about a drinking game. We're going to be fucked up. That's not, like, we can't do that.
No, but it's like the most flippant egg joke. How do you like your eggs, bro? I mean, it's just like, literally, this creature is going to kill Xander. I've already seen this creature killed before, but let me do some egg humor. It doesn't make sense with freshly laid reptilian eggs.
It burns
me up inside.
I
was not bothered by that stupid joke.
I was extremely bothered by
this. It's the mantis equivalent of don't tase me, bro. Like...
He's a horrible character, and if I could, I would kill him.
So I want to jump back to when Giles learns some information about the Ento mythology or whatever. It sounds like he got off the phone with literally an insane person. Yeah. He's describing this phone call where it's like, no, I need him. Get him out of the straitjacket. Let me talk to
right.
him. Anyway, that was just crazy. Giles' friends are crazy, and I love that. That was a great detail. So there's this great scene that happens after Miss French, after they find out that it's the wrong address, they're at the wrong Miss French's house, where Buffy tracks down a vampire and then demands the vampire show her where, the Miss French lives, which is kind of a weird, unexpected scene. I didn't know how they were going to figure it out, so that was a bit of a surprise, definitely made me laugh. And then, of course, she kills the vampire, so a lot of thanks that guy gets.
I mean, the Buffy drinking game of Buffy grabbing a environmentally placed piece of wood must exist, because this is a classic. Yeah, whenever she grabs a piece, I mean, there's so much lumber in this in Sunnydale. Also, the irony of using rope to tie up a guy who has a sharp razor sharp pitchfork for a hand. You know, whatever. It was silly. I was somewhat upset about the idea of that.
Oh, so it was supposed to be this guy? The vampire
that's
was the fork
guy. That's the fork guy, Mike.
Oh, whoa. Man. Mike, you didn't get that.
I thought it was the mantis character.
No. The fork guy was the guy she killed. Well, I'll say this. I was upset about that scene, but then actually...
But guys, no. This is the gold of this podcast, is that, like, that really points out a weakness in the episode. Like, Mike's watched this for the first time, and he didn't even understand who Forkhand was.
Yeah, I will say this: when I was classic Forkhand stuff, but
well, the Forkhand before that scene where he talked about it before they're in the bronze. You see the Forkhand go for the science teacher.
No, that's not the Forkhand. The Forkhand is more of a claw.
Those are pincers.
More of like a
The fork
like this.
It's a Wolverine.
Yeah, it's more of a Wolverine.
I can't see you, John. Anyways, the only compliment I have to that whole.
Yeah, but guys, this says more about. The episode than it says about Mike. It's not like Mike's unobservant. It's the point is that, like, okay.
Look, I'm stupid. I'm confessed. I missed out on the forkhand.
If you were to attack Mike, attack him with a forkhand. You would never see it coming.
I would never see it coming. When did he have a forkhand? It was too dark in all the scenes he's in.
Yes.
Yes,
oh my
it
God.
Is.
Is it a metallic fork or.
Mike, yes. Did you watch on. How did you watch the episode? I'm curious. Did you watch on Netflix or did you watch something else?
Netflix. I watched it on Netflix.
Okay. Because it's actually better on Netflix. Because I actually, for comparison, because Travis said like it's different in the 4:3 than it is in whatever the ratio is they have on Netflix.
It is.
I actually watched both for comparison, and he's totally right. The Netflix version is like, it looks a little better because it's more HD, but the, the DVD is darker and it's, it's more full frame. You get more information.
Yeah, the what you see on Netflix is cropped. I'm very frustrated. I mean,
yeah,
it's cropped, and so everything is a lot better on 4:3. Yeah. Anyways, yeah.
So I will be watching.
Right,
so
but also, I think later on in the series, watching it on Netflix is a real disadvantage because the makeup is so terrible. Makeup and stuff wasn't, it's not terrible, but it wasn't built for HD. So you can see all these lines and stuff.
So what did you think of the monster then? Because is it much cooler? It probably looks better on the DVD then, is what you're saying.
No.
It's definitely in, it's way too much in shadows. There's a fight scene I literally
see. Yeah, you don't see me.
Yeah, it's...
But I, last week I talked to you guys about how I'm really looking forward to watching Buffy and watching the monsters, because there's great practical effects on this show that you don't see on TV anymore. And this episode was not one of those episodes.
Oh, really? I thought the monster was kind of fun, even though it was fought in the shadows. So they didn't have to spend any money ripping it apart and figuring out how that worked.
The monster is intentionally campy, I think. I mean, I think part of it's the budget of a TV episode in its first season, but part of it is that, you know, they're intentionally riffing on, this episode intentionally riffs on 60s monster movies, you know, including Deadly Mantis, obviously. So the cheesiness of the monster is partly necessity, I think, but it's also partly intentional.
I think it's leaning into the intentionalness of it. Because I think one of the mission statements of the show is kind of, the movie was so campy, so let's go the opposite direction. Let's not be campy. But they probably have to lean into it for sake of budget.
So after this scene, Buffy, Giles, the Scooby Gang finally shows up just in time, and they're able to save Xander. There's a somewhat silly shadow fight scene where Buffy fights the mantis in the shadows, but she does it in the name of her dead professor, Dr. Gregory, and she says that, yep, this time she did her homework, which is a great way to remember your teachers. And then she's able to save Xander and Blaine. And then the next scene, as I recall, I think this is the end. We're just over at the Bronze, where we celebrate all great occasions.
We go back to the fight scene for a second.
And all sad occasions.
Travis is back to the fight scene, which we talked about a little bit when you walked off. Good. So sorry.
The only I was gently ribbed last week that I didn't have complaints or criticism for Buffy episodes. My two for this one is something that happened that was great. The other is something that's totally unnecessary, and I feel like we have to validate this. But bug spray is a great visual gag. But the poison that's in a bug spray is not specific to bugs. It's just poison. Okay? So it works on bugs because bugs are very small bodies and yielding to a small amount of poison. Okay? It will hurt a human being if you spray them with bug poison in the face. So, number one. Number two, a voice recorder gag is beautiful.
Yes.
Side A, side B. Young people today wouldn't understand different sides to a voice recorder, probably.
Probably.
They may.
They could say they wrong may, track. They,
yeah, wrong.
I can confirm that they would not know what that means.
Yeah, maybe they wouldn't know it. The second thing that was good is that violence was mostly off-screen, which I thought was really cool and interesting, and probably because of television ratings. I don't know. It's different. Like, it was neater to see, like, the shadow, like, killing and hacking. I don't know. Just very dark. I mean, this is just such a dark, darkly lit scene.
And then, of course, we've neglected to mention, but John mentioned it earlier, the virginity humiliation scene.
Yeah.
Where both Xander and Blaine are recognized as virgins. And everyone in the scene has to comment on it. And Blaine even says he's going to hire a lawyer if they say anything
His dad is a lawyer.
Right. Right, his dad's a lawyer. And he's going to get a lawyer involved if anybody says anything. But, like...
No, I thought... That struck me... Maybe that wouldn't have struck me weird in high school, but it really struck me weird now, the obsession with...
Totally.
...teen virginity. I was like, what's going on? Like,
I've got a whole...
It doesn't go away.
Got a whole section of my notes on that about... And when we get to themes, I got a whole section about that.
Well, let's just finish the episode here. Yeah, so, there's one more scene Buffy has with Angel... Once again, he's mysterious. He doesn't want the jacket back. I don't get much of many cryptic hints, that are interpretable to me about what might happen next. And then we get to see the new science teacher and the secret eggs that are back in his office somewhere. And that's the end. And it's the same ending as the previous episode with the reveal of the trophy where the cheerleader's trapped inside somehow.
Yeah, well, I think the trophy episode is a lot... better an ending. This just struck me as the same way X-Files would always leave it open for a monster to return, but most of the time it wouldn't return, you know? But always, in case this is a popular episode, let's leave a setup for a monster to return. Yeah. Which led me to a thing about how the X-Files treats monsters versus Buffy. But,
I'll say that the finally, season or episode four, finally the interaction between Buffy and Angel, this last little bit, even though they hardly say anything, it's like a little more natural. It feels like they're kind of having conversation. They're, I mean, to be fair, Angel's character is learning how to act on set episode by episode, but he finally kind of delivers some lines, even though he doesn't have a lot to say at all. And also, he's totally, he, I don't know, he thinks he's all clued in to what's going on, doesn't bring up Miss French. He doesn't bring up Miss French. And then, I don't know, to me I saw a parallel between Miss French and Xander and then Buffy and Angel, right? Because literally, Angel's older than her. We know that. Because he doesn't go to high school. By definition, he'd be older. And then he also has dark hair, like Miss French. And then clearly she's a bit worried about him, but it's not like she's like worried like... I don't know.
It feels totally fictional. this connection.
She goes, oh boy. Like, I don't know. I'd like to think that she'd be worried about him in general. Like, this was a cautionary tale she just experienced. But I think she's just generally worried about him. Not because of anything that happened in the previous 42 minutes at all. But anyways. All right.
I did like the line of her saying, oh boy. Just I thought that was a well.
That was very well, that good delivery.
Yeah, well delivered. That was better than the rest of the Angel scenes of just like that establishes more than his acting.
Like, he finally looked at her.
It is the best
like
Angel
way.
Scene that I've seen, but it's a non-scene. He's cryptic. He's a man of mystery. Like there's nothing else is happening here.
But he finally has a good face. Like he actually looked at her without like being like too brooding. It was actually kind of like a normal look.
But it also was lit in a way that really emphasized his pockmarks, which I was surprised by because I don't remember that.
And he looks back at it once. This is a scene where if you ever look at another human being, you can feel like you're doing a good job. You're like, come on, I'm keeping eye contact. I'm saying a few words.
I'm definitely not angeling it up this day.
When you walk away, if you look over your shoulder more than once, you're like, I beat him. I mean, it's just very strange. But let's talk about themes, because
let's move to the themes here.
Are we on themes? Okay.
Yeah, so you guys have both hinted about some of the themes here. Dennis, you brought up the monster theme. Is that a theme, or is that a bigger review? I don't know.
It might be just a bigger review, not... I mean, the monster is the metaphor. It's like how the show treats monsters, right? So sometimes that means that they don't treat... I get frustrated with, like, we don't really understand what this monster is. Like, she's just a big praying mantis who also morphs into humans and has, like, at least human-level intelligence. Like, I enjoy monsters enough. I would like a little more focus on what that is, you know? It didn't bother me when I first was watching this show, but I think it's going to bother me more later on.
I agree. There wasn't a lot of backstory for this monster. Again, because it's a metaphor, so what backstory does it need? But I see what you mean. Like, there's a lot of weird powers that are happening, like the morphing into humans, why that human form clearly to snatch male bait.
Well, and like if you think about like this being the total opposite show as X-Files, where like X-Files... The human drama stuff is really minimal, and it's mostly about them talking about and figuring out the monster, right? And then this show is the opposite.
I would have liked to see, if I was writing this show, I would like to see her turn back into Miss French to visit the guys when they're in jail and somehow justify that they're going to be safe or something, and then turn into a monster. Like, I don't know, just some, like when she's just fully in the monster form, it's pretty anemic. She's much more powerful as a woman than as a monster. So, John, you want to talk about the virginity theme? The teen fantasy?
Yeah,
sex
I mean, I don't know, like, I'm not sure exactly what I want to say about this, but I think it's really obvious to me that this episode is about male virginity and what that means. But what is not clear to me is, you know, is the episode challenging some of our preconceived ideas about male virginity, or is the episode just reinforcing them? And I feel like it's doing both at the same time. So
it might not even be taking a stand.
It might not even be taking a stand. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's setting up for longer stories about Xander's masculinity, just with the setup of his fantasies about Buffy. Like, he really, you know, it's more of an overall thing about how he thinks of women, how emasculated he is, and he doesn't know it. I don't know. Just there's larger things going on with him than this episode is really delving into.
I do want to say, like, so on the one hand, I feel like we have male virginity as So on the one hand, we have the stereotype of the perpetual virgin and how pathetic that is, and that's we've already said that's drawn on a lot of pre-existing and post-existing teen movies. The male virgin is sex obsessed and pathetic and is having no willpower. And I think that it's interesting that that is the ways that that is contrasted against female virginity. One thing that's really interesting, so there's this deleted scene. Travis, did you see this on the DVD?
I don't remember.
So no. I actually didn't watch this scene, but it's on the transcript is on the wiki.
Oh, huh. I watched the special features on the DVD and none of them were connecting to this episode.
Okay.
They were all...
So apparently, I don't know if this is on the DVD or not, but apparently there's a deleted scene and there's a script for it that's on the Buffyverse Wikia.
Oh, good.
And in which Buffy basically completely slut shames Cordelia to her face.
Wait, what is that?
I mean,
what did you say? Slut shames? What the hell? Oh, that's when you embarrass someone for their sexuality.
Right.
Oh, okay. It's something else.
And so basically,
which like Giles does to Buffy, you know, by saying, well, implies with that line about boys.
Right. And this is a lot more direct. So like, so apparently there's a scene that was cut where, it's another scene in the lunchroom, and Cordelia is concerned because these undesirables Buffy and Willow and Xander have taken over her previous lunch table, and Buffy's retort is like, well, it's sad you have so many memories here at this lunch table, she says, and the quote is, you and Lawrence, you and Mark, you and John, you spent the better part of J through M here. Right. And it's just sort of saying, like, you've had all of these boyfriends and you're that makes you lesser. I don't know. And so it's just really interesting how that contrasts against female virginity, and obviously in the culture at large, but certainly within Buffy. And
well, in the thing that reverts expectations in Buffy, right, is that none of the girls care about virginity.
Yeah, they don't.
The male virginity.
That's true.
Only the males care
about
it.
That's true. Yeah, and it's like, it's totally set up as male virginity is on the one hand connected to, Xander has this like completely natural horn dog desire, but on the other hand, it's the thing that's more motivating him maybe is the social aspect of it, right?
The shame
from Blaine, exactly. Like it's actually more social.
Right, the implied slut shaming of men to each other is what's motivating them.
Yeah, or
but the women don't.
It's like it's like inverted slut shaming. It's it's virgin shaming, right?
Crude shaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really excited, and I know we're not supposed to jump the timeline, and I know that that's the rule that I brought up, but
do not.
But I'm really excited to a few episodes from now to go back and compare this episode to iRobot You Jane, and
yeah.
And how it's when it's a woman who's being preyed upon, when it's a girl who's being preyed upon, how that's portrayed differently.
Are there any other themes we want to talk about? Oh, Travis got themes.
I had a few, but I'll distill them. I think there's this. I think the two things. I think in this episodic series, I think it's like the don't trust strangers theme. I don't know. I don't know if it's a theme or just because in every episode. Kind of like whatever the stranger is never can be trusted, and mostly they're adults, and there's sort of this you can't trust adults either in this series as well. But I don't know, to me
what
it's
you're
like
because French is a stranger,
French is not only a stranger and she's an adult, I don't know.
He's a predatory adult.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think we see it in a lot of episodes. Like this, if you're like a new character in this series, or like you've never had screen time on this on the show, you're a stranger, and as an audience member, you should not trust them. This works for Blaine, Miss French, last week's episode, the witch. You know, I don't know. I think it may be just sort of like this whole convoluted.
I don't think I've seen enough episodes to justify that opinion about it, because, you know, like, we don't trust her, but we also just met Gregory the first time, and we kind of trust him. We also, Angel's pretty much a stranger, and we are sort of led to believe or trust him, even though his information is useless, almost useless.
Yeah, I think with Miss French, Miss French is like this parody of a sexy lady. And Jessica Rabbit.
Now he's complaining about the chess joke.
Like, I mean, like, but like, you know, like, so like, I looked up this actress who played her. Her name is Musetta Vander. Because I wanted to know, like, what is up with her accent? And so it turns out she's born in South Africa to Dutch parents. But the point being, that's also not her, like, natural accent. Her natural accent is definitely foreign sounding, but it's not quite what she's doing in this episode.
No.
I don't know.
Weird. I made a joke before we started recording that it's her name's Miss French. She must fake a French accent.
Yeah, but it's not quite French, is it?
I am human. I fake accent.
Is it quite French? It's like something, I don't know. No. To me, it's weird. It's this weird other thing.
Well, let me move on to another theme, which I thought was studying and about doing this homework theme.
Yeah.
Right? They keep repeating about doing your homework. And then, of course, they do study and they do all the research and able to figure out, you know, a couple angles that they can get, which is that, you know, the bat sounds, which give them an angle, but they actually do their homework, which is like just a simple high school movie inversion, right? Where, like, you know, homework never helps out. Well, wait, this time it did, which you'd almost expect. Like, homework doesn't help out, you know, and you, like, have a school book that deflects a bullet, and you're like, oh, maybe it did. You know, like, it was pretty goofy, but it is a theme that they play on, which is, like, just a trope for this type of, this genre. Like, that felt like a very Archie Comics-y theme to have here. Actually, schoolwork is pretty valuable when you think about it. I mean, it's not...
Thanks, Miss Grundy.
Yeah, I didn't learn anything, but, like, you know, that helps to move the... As a story beat, you know, that was an easy one.
Yeah.
Any other themes, Travis?
Well, I wrote down, you know, this idea that you have to believe in yourself, because the people who do believe in you may suddenly die, and then you will not have anyone who believes in you. You know, this is so literal. But this is like the one episode... This is the first episode where Buffy really starts to embrace, like, I'm the Slayer... she doesn't quite say that, like, I gotta kill things, but she really kind of, like, takes charge. Is it because of Dr. Gregory? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Was that intentional?
Her natural leadership skills? Yeah, I think it's interesting because...
This is, like, where she picks it up.
Yeah, and Giles would more typically be the character who makes the plan, but he's not. It's Buffy, you know?
Yeah.
That's one of the fun things about the show.
I would say I almost wanted to write... an additional scene for this episode, which is the end scene where she, instead of just putting the glasses in the jacket, and she knows he's dead, like, Buffy knows that Dr. Gregory's dead, and she puts his fractured glasses in his jacket, and then just lets it hang in that room. I mean, there's so many scenes that could have been cut, and there should have been a true death scene. There should have been at a cemetery or something. I don't know.
Complaining about the lack of cemetery or funeral scenes. But it's just never happening.
But also, like, she should have taken his jacket. Like, she shouldn't have put the glasses in the jacket and closed the door. She should have picked up the jacket and put that on instead of Angel's jacket. And she should put.
Or she's wearing both jackets, and it's just as the series goes on, she keeps wearing.
It accumulates more jackets. She's a Vampire Slayer jacket collector. You know, I mean, that would have been more poetic if she'd put that jacket on instead and smiled or something. I don't know. That would have been a bit strange, right? But the whole thing is strange.
I think that's implying... Like, one of the things that's interesting is this is still so early on. So they can... These characters can still feel emotions about people dying.
Yeah.
Which I don't think they're necessarily able to do later because they've experienced so much.
So many deaths.
but, like, they... that would be giving this... This character is only in one scene a lot more weight than Yeah, I think that would be like so much weight for a character to be carrying throughout the whole series. You know, that would be like if she kept skateboarding with Jesse's skateboard.
No.
Like,
I mean, what?
It would just build so much. No. Like, we need to, like, let these deaths go because there's going to be so many deaths.
Well, I'd say I would normally, I would agree with that normally, except that this is an episode where there's jacket, like, prop and jacket humor.
And, you're right. That is a miss.
Jacket. And this is like another, this is another opportunity for jacket stuff. I mean, you only get so many episodes involving jackets in Southern California. I mean, clearly this was like a symmetric jacket opportunity. Oh, that just burns me up that I mean, maybe they meant to, maybe it laying there was poetic, or she should just put it over her arm, and we should, I don't understand it. I'll stop.
Maybe
the
jacket. Trying to, yeah.
I'll stop. Right. I'll stop. I don't think there's a lot of time in this episode for, or in any of these episodes for them to have any serious mourning or any moments where they're really in consideration of tragedy. They just got to move on to the next scene. I mean, there's been very little so far. So let's move on here. Is there any other random things, or we should move on to the review? Let's move on to the...
Do we need the kill count and Buffy saves count?
Oh, that's... Sure. Let's add that in. What is the kill count?
Buffy kills one vampire and one monster. Xander kills one vampire in a fantasy. The monster kills one person that we see, and more are implied. And Buffy saves at least two people, but more implied.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Thanks for that, Dennis.
Yeah.
I would like to read one thing into the record, which is that this is, if you were going to add things to the Buffy drinking game, there are two instances in this episode, and this is continues something we talked about in the first podcast, is there are two instances in the episode where Buffy helps to further the plot or solve the mystery by looking at people's clothes. So her fashion knowledge actually, so that that's really explicitly happens in the first episode where she sees the vampire and she talks about his clothes. But there's one moment where she knows that Dr. Gregory was murdered, was murdered at school on a certain day because he hadn't changed his clothes. And then there's another also one of her factoids about Ms. French is that her fashion sense screams predator. I just think it's really cool just that as a show, Buffy honors the idea that beauty knowledge is a kind of knowledge, that it's as respectable as any other kind of knowledge, that it's as useful as any other kind of knowledge, you know, because I think...
Yeah, it stays true to the Buffy character.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that would be a great essay, I just watched John, if you want to write that. That would be great.
Yeah.
I just watched a horror movie last night where a character figures out who the murderer is because he's wearing a fraternity pin.
There you go.
It's a Jungle Captive. Jungle Captive. Rondo hat.
All right, so the review.
So the section here that we're talking about is reviews, so we're just going to give our reviews to the episode. So the review would be, you know, something about the plot, the pacing, the characters, the acting, writing, etc. So your overall review of the episode. So my overall review of this episode, I thought the writing was okay. It feels like an average Buffy episode in a lot of ways. It's interesting to see a Xander-focused episode so soon. I would assume there'd be more Buffy-focused than Xander-focused, but I thought the Xander character didn't do anything different from previous episodes. There's no real growth for that character, except we know that he very explicitly likes Buffy and actively fantasizes about it. I enjoyed the new type of monster, so one of my predictions was that there were going to be all kinds of different monsters. Well, here's a new one, and it's totally random. I mean, it metaphorically makes sense and fits in the high school universe, but it still felt a little random that it would be an insect monster. I think overall I enjoyed this episode. I laughed the most, I think, because of the predictability of the characters now that we've talked through them so much that it's like, oh my gosh, everything that these characters do is what they do every time they're presented with these situations. So I'm not seeing any character growth. Maybe a little on Buffy's part, but pretty marginal. So it seems like a completely average Buffy episode.
So for this, I agree. You know, this is the fourth episode. The pacing, as I say, it was crawling. You know, the audience was ready to run at the end. And Buffy, you know, Willow, Giles, they're just crawling along trying to find their way to Mrs. Wrench's house. So This one, I felt that too many jokes in this episode. The pacing was too slow at the end. I would say that this is, overall probably one of the better episodes that we've seen so far. Two issues I don't see working so far in the first four episodes, and this one is that this whole Xander, this oversex, this sort of virile male over the machoism, that's not working for the series. It's not working for this episode. And then the next thing is the Willow unrequited love piece with Xander is also not working. I mean, it's still ongoing. There's still mention of it this episode.
They haven't written any scenes for anything to happen. It's just like it's all these one-off lines. It's like there's no growth beyond, like, Xander's nice.
yeah. So right now, this is feeling a lot more like an ensemble rather than a Buffy plus ensemble, which is sort of like, I don't know what Buffy is not necessarily the total centerpiece so far in these episodes. It's really a lot more ensemble-ish. I like to think of, more of a Buffy plus ensemble, but, I think overall the only real development that we see in this is this character Angel finally starts to act a little bit better. if I had to say there's any development, it is Buffy is nailing her lines. Angel's character starts to act a little bit better, starts to nail one or two of his lines. He doesn't have a lot of lines to nail, but he finally kind of gets it. Looking back, it is strange. Why is the fourth episode a Xander heavy episode when in just two episodes it's another Xander heavy episode?
I've got predictions then.
Yeah.
All right. Spoiler.
I wasn't focusing. I saw it written down. Timeline. I'm not. Oh yeah.
One of my predictions here is more Xander exploitation to come. This is completely unresolved. Xander is still a horn dog, and he is dangerous to the world.
So I mean, in some ways,
he is dangerous to the world.
Anyways, I like this episode because it's kind of meaningless. I don't know. I feel like that's faint praise.
I think the first episode that Drew Goddard wrote, and Buffy is one of the first shows I started to really pay attention to who the writers were and appreciate their various episodes. So I don't know, just to take note who that.
Okay, well then we'll call those out at the beginning of the episodes. I didn't know that would be important.
Yeah, that's a good idea. We should also call it directors.
It's almost even more than episode three. Beginning of like what a normal Buffy episode is. Like, we get the research scenes, we get the fighting scenes and stuff, so we start to see more of what like Willow's use is. She's the hacker at this point, right? So this is maybe the first episode where she's really like a useful part of the gang. Xander's totally useless. He has no function in the gang other than being the damsel, right?
Yes.
I like that it was a different kind of monster, but I thought the monster stuff was handled really poorly, which was frustrating. So I wouldn't give this episode very high. I'd say if you want to like more edited Buffy experience, this is a totally skippable episode. Which isn't to say it's a terrible episode or anything. It's just not like a high functioning.
Well, the next point for me is I would have turned this off when that Xander hypnosis music plays. When he sees Natalie French the first time or whatever, like that was the moment when I was like, I am going to keep watching this, but that is my turn off moment. Mm-hmm. So
I think whatever episode Mike finally says he'd watch all the way through on his own, that will be like a high mark for this series.
That's right.
I think we might not hit that in this season.
Shit. Don't say that.
All right.
I will say this,
John, what's your review?
Yeah. Oh, say your review,
okay.
John.
Yeah. So like that, obviously this episode has problems. The thing that like kind of bugs me more than anything is that the red herring aspect of the episode does not work for me at all. The claw monster, like it's
poor guy.
Like, I mean, I
and that might be more the editing.
Yeah,
than
I mean,
the lighting. That's the lighting.
You can see what they're trying to do in having a fake monster and then a real monster. But the fact that Natalie French is the real monster is telegraphed so early and so clearly that there's really no surprise when it turns out that the claw monster is not important, right?
Yeah.
So, but that said, to me, one of the things I really like about this episode is that it is a Monster of the Week episode with bells on, and it doesn't make any apologies for that. And so in that sense, I don't mind that there's not a lot of character development. And I think one of the things that's really interesting to me about this episode in particular and Buffy in general is the way that Buffy can be both loving and mocking of something. Whether that's like a 60s monster movie trope. So like this movie makes a lot of references to, you know, Deadly Mantis, maybe like obviously visually, or maybe a little less obviously. Like, I feel like this movie or this episode has a lot of like Invasion of the Body Snatchers vibe in the way that Natalie French can kind of like hypnotize all men into following her, and they kind of lose their willpower and become unreliable in the same way that like an Invasion of the Body Snatchers or It Came from Outer Space kind of a situation might happen. And so to me, there's just a lot of references in terms of tone and the way the episode unfolds to 60s monster movies. And it's done in this way where, like, on the one hand, they're making fun of it. On the other hand, they just actually, they're loving it and they're doing it because they love it. And I think the same thing is true of some of the deeper elements of the episode, like, and what they're saying about male virginity. And, like, on the one hand, they are just totally enacting a familiar trope about what young men are like. Here's what adolescent male sexuality is like. It's about being out of control. It's about not knowing how to find your ass, you know. On the other hand, they're also sort of making fun of that idea. They're also sort of like breaking that idea down and talking about how it's really less about sex and more about power among men. It's really not about how you relate to women. It's really more about how men relate to each other. And but it's just doing both at the same time. Like, I just think that's really interesting.
So John, question is, you know, I think traditionally, you know, we've all the myths and a lot of history has been all about female virginity,
right,
as being powerful. Do you think it was interesting that they tried to show that the male virginity was useful or was precious to something or some creature? Because I don't know, male virginity has never been particularly talked about as a mystical power, as something to be tapped into.
No, but like, I don't know. I think
you,
like,
you weren't particularly intrigued.
So Giles has this line about like how this is actually all like Giles really explicitly states that like the virgin thief is a historical trope, right? And he talks.
But not nearly as female virginity. It's
that's way
more prized over male virginity.
But it does get collapsed into this idea that
sirens didn't just try to eat virgins.
That's true. No, that's true. Virgins? But that is true.
I assume most sailors are not.
That's a good point. But
I don't know. I mean, I thought, well, you know, at least I don't think male virgins were good for anything. You know, at least there's something they're good for. I was like, oh, that's a plus. I mean, the only thing I took away is the male virgins were basically the most annoying creature on the planet and might as well have she-mantis take them all.
Right.
See, I think if they were purposely doing something to comment on that, they would make more of a reference to, like, this. It would be more of like a slasher trope of like the slasher always, like the virgin girl is the last one and playing with that. But they ignore that trope.
That's a good point.
This episode.
That's a good point.
So I don't think they are trying to say anything.
No, they're not saying anything
specific
really
about.
Yeah, I know
about the genre.
But and yet.
It's just a Hot for Teacher episode. It's not.
I don't know.
It's the total male fantasy of Hot for Teacher. They play it out in a bizarro way.
There's a reason it's a young boy and an older woman, not just the whole teacher student thing. I think there's something else going on.
You're probably.
I don't know. I mean,
I think Mike might be right in this. Like,
all I've got to say is that there's excellent shoulder work in this episode. That's what I've got to say.
John, I'm sorry I interrupted your review, man. Sorry about that.
No, I think I ran to the end of everything I wanted to say. It's just that I feel deeply split about how I feel about this episode, because I really do feel like it's trying to say something about teenage sexuality, but it also isn't trying at all, and it defaults to a lot of old comfortable tropes, like you said, like the Hot for Teacher thing. I'm not sure this episode does contain anything more than Van Halen's Hot for Teacher, And maybe it does. I don't know. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. I really feel very confused by that. And I've been, I watched this episode 6 times trying to figure out if it's doing more than that, whether it's doing more than that or not. And like, I still can't figure it out.
For some reason, I would actually like this episode in black and white. I don't know if they, it feels very 60s episode. Like, it feels very like this is something forbidden. I don't know. In the modern eye, this is like, well, I mean, of course, it's always forbidden for a teacher to eat her students, but I don't know. Wait. I mean, it feels kind of...
No, wait, this brings up an important question. I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt you, Travis.
No, interrupt me.
There's a point where Giles reveals that that the monster only preys on virgins, and Buffy is incredulous that Xander might be a virgin. Are we to infer from this that Buffy has had sex, and does that...
Definitely.
And does that matter? Like...
Virginity only matters to the virgins.
Right.
I mean, we assume Willow might have had sex also.
No, we didn't assume that, Mike.
We didn't? Okay. No, she just doesn't matter to her. She's like, I think it's cute.
She's strange. I think the whole Buffy, like, there's not enough, like, said about that scene where, like, Buffy doesn't really comment on it and kind of wants to ignore it and then is kind of surprised but doesn't want to think about Xander having sex. I mean, he's so unattractive. I mean, it's just, to her, it's just sort of like, it's like, it feels strange for her to even want to comment. She doesn't even want to comment on it.
You know, if they'd hit it harder, it could have been a really funny payoff, because, like, it is crazy that they go through all this to try and save this guy from a monster that's after him because he's a virgin, and there isn't, like, some crazy, there should be a bigger crack-up at the end. It is a pretty big crack-up, but, like, the idea of saving a guy because he's a virgin, and at no point is he implied that he might be, and then you just laugh at him at the end. Like, after people have died, just to laugh at the guy, like, you were a virgin this whole time, oh my god!
Well, they didn't make any good virgin jokes.
I mean, they don't really hold him accountable for it. They're a little surprised, but they don't really make fun of him as hard as they could.
Totally.
It's not, I mean, it's not quite as humiliating as it could be. So let's move on to predictions here. So I think predictions for me so far, I don't think we're going to see Blaine again. I thought Blaine was going to die, but he's just in for this episode. I don't think we'll see him again. I think we're going to see more Xander's exploitation. This seems like something the show is very interested in, Xander's sexuality, because he's all male sexuality, virgin male high school sexuality. So, like, that's a really easy victim in a world of vampires and monsters. So he will be a victim. We're going to see more Cordelia victimization. That's an ongoing theme that we've caught on to very early on. I guess we're going to see more monsters as metaphors. They're all going to be kind of clear metaphors that fit into established high school kind of film tropes. And we're going to see, I think we're going to see more helpful Flutie.
More Flutie.
And,
oh, Mike.
And again, no funerals. No funerals, yeah. No memorial services, no memories.
No fear, no funerals.
Oh, there are no funerals.
YOLO, guys. No funerals.
Oh, my God. Okay, no comment of any of those. So, all right. So
must all we, right can't, we can't make
we
predictions.
We can't comment on those. Yeah.
You literally know everything. Good. So don't... Oh, yeah. Yep. And then I think I'm decoding the Whedon formula.
Oh, I wanted... Go ahead. Sorry. I forgot. There is a joke, like, while Xander's getting drunk, I just remembered... I think it's when he's getting drunk where he starts talking about shawarma.
Yeah.
And he was like... Oh, that's just a meat honeycomb or something.
Meat hive.
Weird shawarma joke. Meat hive. But there's a, speaking of Joss, like, things he goes back to, in the Avengers, Tony Stark makes a shawarma joke.
Yes, he does. And there's a scene where they all go get shawarma in, like, the ending credits.
Yeah. So he's got a thing alert. About, he thinks that word is funny or something. He's like, that's my go-to
so,
funny
Dennis,
meme.
I don't know if you know, but there's actually a line about that in the Buffy wiki for this episode.
Oh, there it is.
Dude.
Sorry, I just remembered when you said, like, Joss tropes. Like,
yep.
It's just ongoing shawarma. I mean, it's something to look forward to, at least, in future Avengers movies.
Dude, I want some shawarma now.
What? What future Avengers movies will steal which Buffy jokes?
So the next episode is Never Kill a Boy on the First Date.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're done. So I'm going to turn it off. It was thanks to everybody for joining us. Thank you, devoted followers. Please like, subscribe, share with your friends, and tune in next week.
Woo!
Thanks for listening. Reach out to us at BuffyVirgin.com in the comments section to talk more about Buffy. Thanks so much. Have a great week.
Are we done with the podcast? All right. I'm going to stop my recording. All right. Thanks. That was good. Um.